Good morning and welcome back to Nach Yomi. Today we're going to be learning together Divrei Hayamim Aleph Perek Dalet. This perek is once again a perek which deals with lists of names and yichus, placing the family into perspective. And it's really divided into two primary sections. The first half of the perek is the rest of the family of Yehuda. And then we move outwards into the rest of the Shvatim, the rest of the tribes, focusing on Shimon as we start out. So let's take a look at this in small bite sizes. The first four psukim refer to the family of Kalev ben Hur. So we hear about the children of Peretz, Chetzron, Karmi, Hur, and Shaval. And we hear about now the expansion of this family. The Mefarshim try to work out what the pattern is over here, because it does give us some of the family, but not all of the family. Why are we going back on this? We already spent a perek on this, on the family of Yehuda, in great detail in Perek Gimel. What's going on over here? So the Mefarshim point out, as the Metzudas points out, as the Malbim points out, this is a summary, and we're circling back to some branches of the family which are not fully covered. But obviously Ezra, as he's formulating this, as the author over here, is not giving us all the details. He's giving us some of the end details and the relevant points when it comes to understanding the family as well. And he says, the way that the Malbim puts it is, he says, Shechozar Poishinis, it is a reaffirmation Al Yichus Bnei Yehuda, on the family of Yehuda, Mashe Motza B'Megillah Acheres Lahashlim HaYichus. That Ezra's drawing on another book of Yichus as well to put the two together in order to complete it. Therefore, Hitzig Tzionim Yima Yedaber Po, and therefore he places sort of, you know, Roshei Tevos, headings, as to what was discussed before. In Psukim He to Ches, we hear about the family of Ashur, the son of Chetzron, who's the father of Tekoa, and we hear about his two wives, Chela and Naira, and we hear about his whole family. Who is Ashur? Why is it important to hear about him? So he's the son of Chetzron. To put things back in perspective, Chetzron is the son of the Peretz, who's the son of Yehuda. So we're talking about essentially the great-grandson of Yehuda, whose name is Ashur. And the reason why he's mentioned over here, the Malbim brings, is because he actually grew up as an orphan, and he was taken in by Chetzron as a Yasom. And because of this, he, in a certain sense, his whole family was attributed to the kindness which was given to him by his father, his adopted father, Chetzron. We also meet other interesting characters along the way. So if it was from Psukim Tes to Yud, we meet an individual by the name of Yabetz. And we're told that he is nichbad me'echov, he's very honored among his brothers. Why was he called Yabetz? Because he was born in E'otzev, in pain. Whether it means to say she suffered during childbirth, we don't know the specifics. But the word, obviously, Yabetz is from the word otzev or etzev, which means sadness. Similar to a ben-oni kind of experience that Rachel refers to her last child, that she dies in childbirth, for the Mefarshim point out. But nonetheless, we're told of a curious episode where he calls out to Elokei Yisrael, the gods of Israel, and he says, Imborech tevorcheni, if you bless me, virbisa es gavuli, and you'll expand my boundary, then I will, he promises to give back a gift. And he's going to Vasisa Mera'a Levilti Otzbi, not to make me sad, which is related to his name. And Hashem gave him everything he requested. So he sort of made some sort of deal. He made some sort of request and pledge to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What's this all about? So the Mefarshim point out that, you know, as the Ralbag says, he was a Nasi Shevet. He was a leader of the tribe at a certain point in time, which is why we're focusing on him. But it could also mean that the part of the debate over here, the Chida points out, the Malbim points out, that he was pegged in a certain way by the name that he was given of Yavetz being Be'otzev, in sadness and limitation. And what the request over here was not so much of a military nature, more of the nature of expansion. He said, I don't want to be limited to be the type of person who's going to be a person who's born in sadness and lives a sad life. And therefore he says, in fact, the word Yavetz, he transformed into the words Yishiyoatz v'ribetz Torah b'Yisrael. He was an advisor, counselor, and he spread Torah expansively through Israel. So he transformed his destiny by breaking through the mold of his name. And that's what's been going on over here to describe this expression of leadership. This is very fascinating, as we see Divrei Hayamim does this. In and amongst the lists of names, we do hear stories about individuals and how they succeed, some of the uniquenesses, aspects about them. We hear in Psukim Yud Aleph to Yud Beis about the people of Anshei Recha. We hear about their families. Then from Pesukim Yud Gimel to Chof, we hear about the families of Kenaz, and we hear about Osniel, Saroya, and we hear about the children of Osniel. Again, it's important to notice that Osniel, of course, was the first Shofet in Sefer Shoftim as well. Also noteworthy, noting that in Pasuk Yud Ches, we hear about the Bene Bisya, Vaspara Sherlokach Mored. So there's a person from the family of Yehuda called Mored who married Bisya, the daughter of Parah. We sometimes call her Basya, but that might be that there's the name is actually Visya or Bisya, which is described here in Dera Yamim. We also now hear about the last aspect of the family tree of Yehuda, and that's the family of Shelah. Remember, Shelah is the third of the five children of Yehuda. Yehuda has Er Onan, who died early, prematurely. Shelah is the one who Tamar wants to marry, but Yehuda denies her access to, and ultimately Yehuda has two children with Tamar, and they are Peretz and Zerach. But in the end of the day, what happened to that third child of Yehuda? So we hear about the generations of a Shelah, and what's fascinating to me is if you notice that his firstborn son is Er, which means that Shelah actually called his firstborn son the name of his deceased older brother, almost in the act of Yibum, which Tamar herself was looking to perform. Just where you just notice that in the lists over here. We also hear about in Pasuk Chof Beis how there are these two children who are, the names are Yoash and Saraf, Asher Bo'alu LeMoav, that they were involved in a relationship with Moav, which the Ralbag points out that could mean that these might be the real names of Mahlon and Kilion, as an example. These may be, in fact, if we assume they're from this side of the family, which is more complex to assert, but that ultimately this could be the real names of Mahlon and Kilion. And as the Pesukim point out, Hadvarim Atikim. These are ancient words. These are words which come from a very, very far and ancient tradition, which Ezra is committing to over here. We now move on to the second half of the Perek, which is from Pasuk Chav Dalid onwards, and this section of the Perek is really about Shimon. We shift from the family of Yehuda, where we really primarily focused on the line of David, and now we shift into how Shimon is constituted. So first we hear about in Pasuk Chav Dalid the children of Shimon, that's Nemuel, Yamin, Yariv, Zerach, and Shaul. And then we go on to hear about the Nesiim, it sounds like. Shalom Benoi, Mivsam Benoi, Mishma Benoi. It's hard to know whose son they are. Some of the Forshim say they belong to the last pronoun, which was that the children of Shaul. Why is he focused on? Hard to understand. The Malbim says it's referring to the Nesiim, the princes who come out of Shimon. We hear about a number of those princes. Why are we shifting to Shimon first? So it is interesting to note that Shimon actually is denied a territory in the land of Israel. Yaakov Avinu gave a curse to the tribe of Shimon, Afitzem Yisrael, Achalkan the Yaakov Afitzem Yisrael, that he denies them a territory as a function of their violent crimes that Yaakov sees Shimon and Levi perpetrating. And as a function of that, Shimon and Levi do not have their own territory. Levi has Arei Levim, has cities. Shimon does not have his own territory, but he is part of the goral of another tribe. Which other tribe? That is the tribe of Yehuda. That's why, in fact, if you look in the Parshas Zos Habracha, the blessing of Shimon is subsumed in V'zois Yehuda, Shema Hashem Kol Yehuda, that Shimon does not have his own blessing. He's subsumed into the Parsha of Yehuda, which is why his territory is subsumed into the territory of Yehuda as a subsection. This also makes sense because during the time in the desert, the tribe of Shimon towards the very end, in the whole episode of Baal Peor, the whole Pinchas episode, a lot of the tribe of Shimon were decimated. So they were much smaller in numbers as they entered the land of Israel. And that's why we hear them right after Yehuda as a subset as well. They also make conquests in Sefer Shoftim and Sefer Yehoshua alongside and with Yehuda, almost as their shadowing agent, they're being able to give them the necessary territory. It is interesting to note that the Pesukim do emphasize the Kol Mishpachtam Loi Hirbu Ad B'nei Yehuda. They did not ever exceed the numbers of Yehuda, so although they did grow, they did not get to great and large numbers. We do hear then about the cities of Shimon from Sukkim Chavches to Lamed Gimel, where we hear about all the cities that they lived in, and we're told that these cities are where they lived, Eile Harehem Ad Meloich David, until the king of David. Why is it that the cities are only labeled until the times of David? So Rashi and the Radak explain, Rashi explains that as their population grew throughout the 369 years before the Beis HaMikdash, in the times of the Mishkan, that what happened was is they slowly grew more and more, and as they grew more, they became more tension with their hosts, which was Yehuda, and they looked elsewhere to find their territory. They complained to Shaul, they complained to David HaMelech, and David HaMelech very, very happily booted them, sent them north to the tribes of Shaul, to Ish-bosheth, so that area, who were quite happy to have them, because they were quite happy to take away territory or constituents from Yehuda as well. The way the Radak points out is, as you see from the later parts of this parak, we're going to see that they also will expand their territory eastwards to the east side of the Jordan. So as Shimon expands, he also finds more territory outside of his host Shevet, which is Yehuda. To me, this is a very important point, because when we talk about the Golus Aseres HaShvatim, the exiled 10 tribes, one would wonder why a tribe of Shimon, which was initially found to the south of Yehuda, the very southern tip of Israel, would not be part of the Assyrian exile. And the answer is because they did move out from that at the time of David HaMelech. We also go a little further into the Perek, and it is interesting to notice we hear about the Nesim of the Shevet from Psukim Lamed Dalet to Lamed Ches. And then we hear about two small conquests at the very end of the Perek. From Sukkim Lamed Tes to Mem Aleph, we hear about a conquest of a land, the Mizrach Hagai, to the east of the valley, where we describe how they found a very good pasture area, which was Rachavas Yadayim, and quiet and protected, and didn't have too many alliances with other neighboring kingdoms. And they went and they conquered this area from the Meunim. This is a nation that was living there, and they conquered them even Adayom Azeh, which means from the times of Ezra, there were still people from the tribes of Shimon who lived at this time, and this is dated to the times of Yechizkiyahu Melech Yehuda. Which means to say much later on, even after, as the rabbi points out, the Golus of the Aseres HaShvatim, which means even though the Assyrians had taken the 10 tribes into exile, there were still those of Shimon who were still making conquests on the east bank of the Jordan and settling there even to the times of Ezra. We also hear the last conquest in Psukim Mem Beis and Mem Gimel, the last two Psukim of the Perek, where they actually conquer in the area of Har Seir. Again, this is also the area where the country of Jordan is today, where they were able to conquer in that arid territory from Amalek. Apparently, there were still strongholds of Amalek left in the mountains, and they were conquered by the tribe of Shimon, those left over from Shaul and David, and they were conquered over here. The Dat Mikra points out a very interesting point, and that is that some academics would say, because Shimon was such a compromised Shevet, they lost so many numbers in the desert, they didn't have their own Nachla, they never had produced a Shofet or a Melech in Jewish history, that perhaps they assimilated and disappeared off the face of the planet. When you read Sefer Dirayim, it becomes clear that quite the opposite is true, that although it's true that Shimon started off somewhat more humbly, they did expand from their territory, and in fact, even while the other tribes in the north were being exiled, they were expanding their territory and conquering a little further to create their enclave, which lasts even to the times of Shivas Tzion, even at the time that Ezra recognizes their significant presence as well. This closes the tribe of Shimon, and we're going to move on to the next Shvatim in Perek Hay. In the meantime, have a wonderful and meaningful day.